Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Matthew here. Scaffold is on a short break, but in the meantime, I wanted to put a rerun down the feed. My 2019 interview with the Italian architect Francesca Torzo. We recorded the interview the morning after her Architecture Foundation lecture at the Barbican Center, and it's really one of my favorites. There's something so disarmingly genuine about Torzo and her work, which seems to somehow exist outside of time, rooted as much in antiquity as in the present. Torzo has just been nominated for an EU Mies Award for the Z33 house in Belgium. And not too long ago, this very conversation was transcribed and published by the Italian publisher Timos Books. You can find out more at timosbooks.com. That's thymosbooks.com. All right, so I'll be back again in a couple weeks with new episodes, but for now, here's my 2019 interview with Francesca Torzo.
You were not there yesterday.
I was.
Oh, you were there?
I was. I was sitting in the back.
Okay.
Yes, I was there.
How was it for you?
I felt very enchanted by the lecture. In a way that I don't often feel when I come to see architects talk about their work.
That is good.
And I'm on my way over this morning. I was trying to explain to myself where that sense of enchantment came from, and I think it has to do with how otherworldly both your work is and you are as a person, based on this brief impression I had of the lecture last night, where I felt like in some way you just kind of emerged from the mists, the way your buildings appear to you, from some other time in some other place. Another thing that I was astonished by was the sense of freedom that you seem to have been able to grant yourself in the way that both you design your buildings, but also that you explain them and you express yourself to a public. And so, I wonder maybe if we could start there. Where does this sense of freedom come from?
The question is very interesting because you're touching my most precious value, freedom. But then freedom may be very abstract. And I would not say I gained, but I protect a certain degree of freedom. You ask where it comes from, and maybe that question I'm not really able to answer. I feel more at ease recalling where my interest is or what matters to me. During the work, I'm always very curious of a cultural context and a material context which is very wide. It's not only the site given for an assignment. And so I always start from listening to a kind of storytelling about landscape, urban context, people. But it is a plurality of variables and ingredients, and maybe that comes also from my personal history. I thought I would be physics or a writer. I didn't have a plan becoming an architect. It was maybe a kind of postponing the choice, and therefore I'm always seeking for a plurality of stories. So I'm very fascinated by construction, technique. I love to go to museums of any kind. anecdotes are highly valuable, as well as myth stories. Mm. But in that sense, more people are like me. Don't think I'm exceptional. But indeed, there is a tenacity. And also probably rising from an incapability of making a move if I do not understand, or if I'm not convinced of a kind of loyalty of an asset. You have many negotiations in the practice of making big links, which are negotiations at a cultural level, at a material level, and many times I encounter, but I think that happens in several professions, a kind of automatic mechanicism of choices which have no motivation before. For example, the building site of Belgium, the House for Art, the builder was an association of two companies, Hauben and Belenko. And they both told me in different moments of the process that before this building site, they thought that things were done in one way. And this one way was relating on convention, on habit, on prejudice, also a certain degree of laziness, of thinking. And after this building site, this building site is the proof that just everything is possible if you just stop and think. So the protection of my freedom is otherwise said, for me, the protection of honest life and practice, where the curiosity is feeding and fed by formulating fresh questions and precise questions, which are naturally all the time different because life around is all the time different. Mm.
This sense of honesty also came through in your talk last night, and earnestness. And I feel, as an architect, quite vulnerable when I put myself in a place of total earnesty, vulnerable to being taken advantage of, or to investing all of my efforts in a kind of passionate expression that then is preyed upon by other industries or other actors in the broader field of architecture. Basically, architects work so hard, and I imagine you work harder than most. And in your case, your earnestness and your honesty has played to your advantage. But for many architects, I get this sense that they kind of toil at their own expense. And I just wonder how, maybe this comes back to this sense of, I guess, freedom to invest in one's own work and to commit fully to one's own work. But how do you have the confidence, or how did you have the confidence, probably at the outset of a project like Z33, to be able to throw everything into it?
Everybody is vulnerable. It's not easy to face the contradiction of one's expectations and also the practicalities of life. But mostly, I think, are hurting the expectations and projections one has on its own life. And I believe it's a very hard time for architects today, because it's, in a way, paradoxically, a highly specialized profession, but with all the time less and less competence recognized. Mm. Architects are in charge of the impossible task of formulating a new image of life for people, image or imaginary. So it is very difficult. From my side, I'm insensitive to that. It's not merit. It is how I feel. I'm really simply curious. And so I do not feel the pressure of a profile for my practice or my work, but I'm just interested in the work itself. And that releases me from a lot of human stumbling and fighting, I guess. You spoke about confidence, and strangely, I would not speak about myself as that confident, in the sense that I'm stubborn and I'm curious, and if I do not understand, I don't move. So I can take very extreme stance just because I need understanding. I would not call it confidence. It is an urge. In fact, yesterday evening, I was very nervous.
And you said as much when you started the lecture.
Yes. I said, better to say it at the beginning, and so it's clear that if it is that visible, people already know. So we are all more relaxed.
It's interesting. You'd often assume that to be free requires confidence. But in hearing you talk last night, there was such an, I guess there was a stated lack of confidence, but there was such an agility and fluidity through which you know, pass from one thought to the next and one association to the next. I felt like it was kind of hypnotic, and I felt like I was being invited into your subjective experience. It was an invitation you were giving to kind of join you on this train of thought. And I guess to give people a sense of what you actually talked about, because I'm being quite abstract right now, there was a structure to the presentation that focused on the Z33 Museum in Hasselt, Venice Biennale exhibition in 2018, and your work in China. But the way you spoke about these things, you had kind of threaded your thoughts, or you'd established your thoughts on the foundations of other thinkers. Walter Benjamin came up. Levi-Strauss was the kind of introductory.
And Sergio Celibidache.
Yes. And then I think with these kinds of figures forming a kind of constellation maybe under which you're thinking, I wonder, like, what is the tradition of thought that you're a part of, if any? What kind of examples are you leading by to be able to think this way, or to be able to kind of make these connections, to talk about your work?
Due to my very solid shyness when I was a child and a teenager, I was also very often ill, so I've been growing up with books. So I need reading. Therefore, there is an infinite constellations like the sky. There are so many incredible minds that have lived and that always can help you, even when they contradict each other. That is what I'm what touches me so much, that humankind is since such a long time reflecting on its own life, but in a such sentimental, but not romantic, sentimental as a living being made of thoughts, and emotions, abstractness, and materiality since millennia. I have this astonishment and wonder, how did a man, which was almost a monkey, 8,000 years ago, start engraving dances on a rock? Isn't it unbelievable how that happened? That a monkey started making a tool to portray a dance, or hunting of giraffes, so to represent rituals and moments of life which are holding already all this imagination. So there is a mystery that I hope will stay a mystery for all my life. So I don't think there is a sorting out. And that's very warm to listen to you, and also a relief, because I was working really profoundly on the talk of last evening, because I highly respect the institution, and I was hoping to give a contribution, a solid contribution to the institution and Alice. And the construction was indeed like a storytelling, an antique storytelling, a mythological storytelling, which has always a kind of circular time. And so it was very important. There was, I think from your question that you noticed, that there were kind of inner circles. So there was a kind of almost invisible repetition from all the chapter, and then a main coming back to the beginning. And why the choice of this structure of narrative? It is tuning the talking and the words and the pace with the main question of my daily, which is, how can you have an understanding which is precise, logical, and at the same time reading a kind of unconscious level that is, for me, all this cultural layering through millennia. It's not a bubble of feelings that is embarrassing to talk about. And the only way I found is through a kind of folk structure. Where you reapproach some key figures, personages, or key questions through meeting them again and again. In that way, it's like the mind has time to rest with the personage and think about something different. And the will of presenting a selection of projects, or three, but start with the Triennale Exhibition Cosmos without talking about the exhibition, really, is because I think the most interesting thing are when you don't have a footnote. So to show you something, but speak about something different. The mind of people I observe has hungriness all the time, like also children. They respect you when you challenge them, not through competition, but when their curiosity is kept alive. And it's not, again, a race or a game, but the mind of human being, observe, has hunger all the time and is in need of, at the same time, attention, movement, and privacy. That is also what I'm looking in the building. When we were talking about Zi-33, I just sketched a small note that all spaces are a little bit smaller than you would need, or feel a little bit bigger than you would expect. And that displacement, which is really very subtle, is to allow people to now I can say it works, so I'm very happy to allow people to have a space on their own, even when they are with others. Also if you go in the street, you always see gestures. If you, we look down now, all people choose their way of walking in the street, meaning they choose on which side they walk, because if there is this convention of one direction or the other. But each individual is making him herself at comfort. It is a cultural instinct. And also you see how people, you see that, that man, he chose a place on his own now, in between the light and the yellow metal stick. If you observe people and gestures, you see that there are kind of recurrent gestures, and that is where I read culture. Mm. And this happens also with buildings.
The way you're describing the people on the street right now obviously translates into a curiosity about people generally. And you kind of, the way you're talking and the way you're observing, to me you talk like a writer. You talk like a novelist almost. And you have this.
Isn't all about that?
Yes.
Making spaces, don't
yes,
you think so?
I think so. And so there's, to me, as I hear you speak, a novelist's sensibility at play. I mean, further to that point, Chaosmos, which is the title of the exhibition you put on at Venice.
In Milan,
at the Triennale.
Yes.
The title is taken from James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake. And then for another exhibition, which I think was part of the Venice Biennale, you had written a monologue about spaces, which was adapted from Virginia Woolf's
Words Fail Me.
Exactly, her famous essay, Words Fail Me. And what you had done very deftly is changed words to spaces and made some subtle alterations beyond that. But this kind of fluidity between the meaning of words and the meaning of spaces, or words as a kind of tool for transmitting meaning, and spaces as a tool for transmitting meaning, or perhaps a vessel for transmitting meaning, seem to resonate so much. And I guess that ties into this question of the writerly sensibility you have and how integral that is to the architect's sensibility.
Mm-hmm. It is, was Wittgenstein saying, quoting, of what you cannot speak, you should keep silent. And so it's very difficult to speak about spaces, especially for where is my interest, without sounding vague or naive or romantic, to speak with precision. That's why I am asking help to novelists. And I feel very precise, both this coining a new word by Joyce and Virginia Woolf interview of the 37, because they are able with simplicity to exactly welcome the paradox of understanding between individual and collective, the depth and layered slow process of culture, the paradox of rationality and intuitive in any human being, without being soapy, without being romantic or embarrassing, with a certain degree of dryness combined with empathy. So you feel that there is getting moved by life. I remember, I think it's the opening of one of the tales by Nabokov, Ada ovvero l'ardore, Ada or the passion. Maybe I'm making for sure a wrong translation of the title, where he is portraying in literally maybe five lines a soft man in a changing room in a shop for elegant dresses, and he's struggling with his body because he doesn't feel comfortable. It's too big. He wouldn't like that big body. He's trying to fit into a jacket and a pair of trousers when from an opening of the door, he sees all through the shop and the window, and he sees on the street a beautiful foot with shoe of his beloved one coming out of a carrozza. And that is made in five lines. Mm. And Nabokov was writing in English most of the time, not in in Russian. And I think in a way, like Virginia Woolf was saying, but they say it better than me, with spaces you don't feel comfortable to be told how you should live them, but you live them before you live in them, before feeling them. You think them before you are in. But luckily, people normally don't have to think all of this. But as an architect, as my responsibility is to make spaces, I do have to think about that. So how do you orchestrate spaces? So it's not writing a plot for me, like for a novel. It's more building an open, precise narrative which has a certain degree of rigidness in its physical being that allows a plurality of plots inside. So it allows interpretation of people. Then, yes, there is a secret silent orchestration, like a orchestra director. So there is always a narrative. The spaces of Z33 are extremely different from the dance hall, as from the Pambu Library Pavilion, as from another house I made in Tuscany. So each project is extremely different from one to the other, but one common thing they have is this plurality, which is also what I mostly love of author or without author buildings. A space where you like to go back because it speaks of different time, different cultures, and it's not never dies, keeps on living. But even the Pantheon, which is one room, you would say, but it has so many scales inside, so much narrative. In the bas relief, it has been inhabited, and also all the cycle of statues is different, different time from the flooring, and of course from the dome. So different time layered, but they protected a story of the space, which is not a plot. Before studying architecture, but even when I studied architecture, I had no idea what was making buildings. I loved to study history. I loved to discover the craziness that, like the main mathematical tool, which is a base of software to calculate structures and prove stability, was almost invented to discuss and prove the existence of God, mm-hmm. no, like the infinite integrali, and dancing. That dance, very important dance for me. Still today, also don't have time, and I work so much that I don't succeed in dancing how much I would like to. But it's. I did different types: classical dance, contemporary dance, tango, and I never thought about it. It's just that you have your body, you have the music, and you have other bodies. Some are moving, your companions of the dance or improvisation, and then you have a public. It's a very complex constellation of relations. There is a lot about space, but there is also a lot about unpredictable reactions and happenings. And with dance, it's very clear that when it is not full, the movement, it's painful. So it's beautiful with dance that when you see it's all natural, there is a lot of work behind to achieve that naturalness, and all the point is to be natural. And when it is not natural, you almost feel your body shouting. It's a movement, no? When you feel it stopped, you feel unfinished, you feel incomplete. The same thing is also thinking spaces. But this is almost a little bit embarrassing to me because it's very personal, and but it's very clear for me the sensation, the sensation. Mm. But it's really embarrassing me a little.
Why?
Maybe I should rephrase it. I think that my experience with dancing, but also with playing the flute, is when you don't achieve the fullness of the sound or with your body, or the fullness of a movement with your body, the space and other body, but in first place your body, you are mortified, you crumble. It's really unbearable. And the same thing with space is when it's not, there is no, if you follow a rule in a mechanical way, you can't get fullness because you're doing an exercise. Then fine, it's very much needed to train. But the only thing that matters is that fullness. And so if you need to deny a window to complete the experience of a space, you have to allow yourself to deny the rule you have given as discipline to an orchestration. It's a very serious profession making buildings. We have a lot of responsibility, economical, static, cultural, at the level of daily. So it's a serious profession. It's not a game. I think that's why I think it's needed a low profile and a humble profile to be architect.
Maybe further to that point, there's this word that comes up in the way you described the position of your practice as being defilad, defiladed. Yes. This is a word I hadn't come across before, but it seems to suggest that you are consciously outside of or disengaged from certain distractions that tend to overtake us and pull us away from work and focus. You're kind of on the periphery, I guess, physically. Where is your studio located?
In Genova, at the moment, it is. You cannot arrive by car, so you have to, like, bring on top also the 40 kilos of concrete when you're making the model. So, has some side effects, but it's beautiful view towards the sea.
And it's detached, and this is a space for thought. and reflection and focus and
work. Yes, but also on that I would like to a little bit provoke this kind of legend on the retreat.
Romantic.
Yes. One thing I did very rapid when I won the competition on Saturday 3, I closed my website. Same day. The morning I got so many phone calls and I felt was really not the time. I found it highly embarrassing and unhonest, like everybody willing to talk when there was nothing to talk about. Mm-hmm. There was no building, so what are we talking about? Just that. And so the only way in this time is to just cut completely communication. And that was my choice. Which I'm aware is the opposite of, I think, anybody would do. But it's really coming from this very basic thought that there was nothing to talk about. It was my first building at a certain scale. It's different now, like with other projects that are in progress, because it's they're going to be, we are with the prototyping, building permit. They already are in a process. But winning a competition is nothing yet for me. So we matter the building.
And there is a span of years in which you seem to have consciously stayed removed.
Yes, I was busy making the building. It has been an excruciating process, really. Because of politics. This deterministic lazy pattern of professional. So in order to make feasible something which was highly ambitious, like this a public building, ambition in the sense we spoke yesterday of this festivity representing a community. On the other side, a budget less than social housing.
Really?
7 million for 4,600 square meters. 5,000. Aha.
One can see me, my jaw is dropped.
So I'm very proud. I'm very proud. Less than social housing. And to do that in the competition, it was like we had a plus of 1 million at the end, but of this, like only 300,000 approximately for the scope of work of the competition, and the other were extra required by the client, Provincia Limburg, for to update all the fire equipment of the existing building, which was not in the beginning part of the scope, because I said that you have no money, you can you don't have the money, you have to choose, clearly. And so from the competition, the decisions were very, very sharp. It's like 85% of the budget on the extension building, and only 15 left on the extension. And also in the extension building, in the extension building, there are really facade taking money, the detailing, and all the rest, you could almost call it fish and chips, but it is done with care. In every turn, every cubic centimeters of the building is thought. So it's quite a process. And also it was public tender, so you cannot name a detail. So like you make all the cost check, you develop an experimental facade, all, but you cannot name the people. So all the tender documents were drawn until one-to-one scale. So it was thousands and thousands and thousands of drawings. And all the text was full of, I placed a lot of kind of those invisible ink sentences that everything had to be approved also by me. And not only the client, to protect a client, you need to be on top of the client, if you are wholeness and respectful, of course, no? Like that you need a kind of double key to say yes. Mm. Because a public client is not like a private asking your house, where you may have a dialogue and then that person has definitely the right to live how he wants, no? But public, the public has responsibility for the invisible ones, but also has quite an agenda of, say, kind of ambitions that may sometimes be in conflict with a wider good. Mm. And then we had a second tender because when it was right, it was cancelled. And so all the process, it's like all 10 years, the building site, 1 year and a half working days. So incredibly fast. Mm. Mm. So it's quite a process. In that, I am highly stubborn. So when it was not clear, the feedback from the contractor or for other actors of the process, I was building up a very solid argumentation and putting everyone at the corner. So logic matters, facts matter. That way you can overcome some foolishness of process of making buildings. Mm. You can save money and can make things feasible. And another thing is that people don't like to be taken as fool, as stupid. So once you share a vision, and can you agree, okay, we go for it, like with the workers, people stand because they need pride. And so I was discussing about the exchange of letters from Bauhaus with some masonry men. I brought them some copies and then they were coming back with others they found on their own. So a dialogue, and when people have dignity, a lot more is possible beyond convention, meaning convention, not the part of the cultural habits where you can rest in, but the lazy, a little bit cheaty frame that we most of the time encounter, which is not something bad on its own. It is bad in the moment you believe it's a kind of law of gravity. Mm. When it's not. It's just experiments of men and failures of men so they can be discussed or transformed. Mm.
I think to end, I want to ask you about more about experimentation and the way you've taken certain details into the studio to experiment on or fabricate in some cases. So with the museum, I'm thinking of the soffits or the ceiling. The diamond pattern ceiling. As I understand it, the molds of which were fabricated in your office?
Digitally. When right. We made it a one-to-one to check the size in papier-mâché. Mm. So this was a part of check one-to-one. We also made a twin window that I must say I have very, very much affection for that window, which has only 230 millimeter of glass. So see, my hand, we say it's so narrow because also the wall is deep, but then with this form, it's very, very natural. We don't expect that. So there are a lot of one-to-one in the studio. But all the point is to, what we do in the atelier with my team is to check hypotheses we made so that we can support the stand of other people. So we can give knowledge that we discovered, or we have the solidity to support when other people may have to make a battle for a common goal. So it's always a down to earth, but not in a trivial way. So it's kind of pragmatic humanism. Mm. On the other side, also looking this exhibition in Milan was very surprising. I found I have 20 years of work that I didn't realize because I never look back, so I keep on going, mm-hmm. moving. And there are really kind of assonances, and it's strange that in all projects there is always a structural or construction experiment, but it's never the purpose. It seems I and we just land there to find a solution that can that is able to combine several variables, and most of the time the most sensitive variable is silence, this naturalness where you don't need to see all the effort. You see this with the pendulum in Padova, or also this facade. It's jointless because there was no way to place a joint, because it couldn't become a theme, because the windows had another logic, and so it would sound dissonant, forced. And so we had to make all these 6 years research to find a way to avoid joints, because otherwise it would have betrayed the citizens. Mm. So the motivation is, please let a child throw a ball on the wall and have back a sound of a full wall, a real wall. That.
How do you survive?
Doing a lot of jobs and not meeting much myself. Mm. Or maybe I need the most, because I need naturalness and fullness in life. So maybe it's like literally Ariosto, but practically I need not much. Good wine, a cigarette, good food.
Hmm. I just want to thank you for your time this morning and for bringing forward such evocative ideas and producing such evocative work. And I guess giving me, and also I hope everyone else who's been able to hear you speak, a renewed sense of freedom in the work they do. Freedom and possibility. So thank you, Francesca.
I thank you, Matthew, really. And I really hope, because I was really speaking with you. Mm. So I have no idea what is coming out and what is worth, but really speaking with you. So I'm really touched for what you saw.
Thank you.
Now you have to go to work.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful encounter.
So that was my 2019 interview with the Italian architect Francesca Torzo. Special thanks to Timeless Books for turning this episode into a book, which you can find out more about at timelessbooks.com. That's timosbooks.com. Thanks as always to Scandalin, and thanks to you for listening. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.